It's impossible to be in more than one place at the same time, until now. We've heard a lot about virtual reality and augmented reality, but have you heard about remote reality, where you're virtually controlling something physical in the real physical world? And what if that physical thing you're controlling is a million-dollar high-speed electric race car capable of 100-plus miles per hour, and you're in a race series where the drivers could be located anywhere in the world? And let's add the exciting component of making it an American Idol-like competition so even you can become a driver if you have what it takes. Welcome to the world of Avicar. My guest on today's episode, Cartier Brown, is one of three co-founders of Avicar, a company that's using remote reality technology to race sports cars in the first private motor racing league of its kind. We have a great conversation where he breaks down the intricacies of remote reality technology and explains how Avicar is using it to power their unique racing series. We talk vehicle design, plans for the league, driver demographics, how digital twins provide a foundation for everything from design to driver training, and all the excitement that's building up around remote high-speed electric car racing. We also touch on Cartier's incredible successful career in the movie and music video business, the inspiration that led to the launch of Avicar. So join me, Ed Bernardin, on this episode of The Future Car. Cartier, welcome to The Future Car Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, Cartier, let's start at the top. So the vision behind Avicar is to allow people to race these electric cars remotely. They could be located all over the world, unlimited distance between them and the actual racetrack and the cars themselves. All this is achieved through remote reality. So maybe explain to us what remote reality is and how Avicar is taking advantage of it.
Absolutely. Would love to. So similar to virtual reality and augmented reality, remote reality is a little different when it comes to the immersive experience. What it allows you to do is experience other environments in the real world in real time. So you can actually experience something in a completely other area of the earth and experience it in real time. So what's different about virtual reality and augmented reality is that it's digital graphics intensive. Remote reality relies on live stream cameras. So everything is real. You're actually moving physical objects in the real world, and you're essentially in two places at the same time. And there's a whole plethora of things that come with this type of technology that we're really excited about.
So we're all familiar with Formula One, NASCAR, IndyCar, traditional racing. Then there's esports, which is really a video game. But this is, maybe it's a cross between the two. And one of the things you say about it is you're doubling down because it feels real, right? Because virtual reality and video games try to make it feel real. But you say it feels real because it is real. What does this mean in the context of remote reality racing and remote reality technology?
So my background comes from the content video production space. Been in that space for over a decade. So when it comes down to content and sports programming, more so in particular, one thing we got to realize when we looked at the market was that the younger generation wasn't watching sports as much as the generation that preceded it. One of the reasons was that events that are 90 minutes, 2 hours, you know, maybe sometimes even longer, it's really tough for some of these younger guys who just want to move around and keep things moving. Another aspect which we found really interesting was the interactivity with the sports. And because there was no interactivity in what they were watching, many of them graduate to social media where it's much more interactive than a passive 2-hour programming. So it put us on this rabbit hole of trying to push the content a little further and make it more so instead of just witnessing a sports game or witnessing, you know, sitting on the sideline and experiencing that for yourself. What if you can actually be in the sports game itself? And to be able to control that and the outcome of that and the outcome that affects the real world, that was very, very interesting to us because we realized that can has a new dynamic when it came down to sports competition. So remote reality, we came at this essentially at a sports programming content perspective because that interactivity and something that would just connect to a younger demographic. And F1's doing a great job, phenomenal job, and NASCAR, especially with Netflix, how it really spiked that interest amongst early consumers. But just the broad strokes, when you look at the numbers, it's quite interesting. So for us, we really want to take this a slightly different approach than what Formula One is doing very successful at, and NASCAR and Formula E. But we wanted a motorsports league that you can participate from your living room. You could participate from your couch. And that was something that no motorsport league is doing right now. So that was the journey we went on. Aside from the content aspect, we realized on an engineering and technology aspect, we were opening up a plethora of opportunity. And as we were starting to speak to some of our mechanical engineers and these guys are really bright people we fortunate to work with, we just was fascinated by the opportunity that this technology can allow in motorsports. So we just went down this rabbit hole to change not just sports programming, but technology and a disruptive, immersive experience that was slightly different than virtual reality and augmented reality.
So one of the key things you just talked about was the ability to participate. So if you think about Formula One, you've got 20 drivers. There's a limited number of drivers in NASCAR and IndyCar and Formula One and Rally, whatever it might be. Are you saying that there's a way here where you can open that up to more people somehow? And I do want to talk about your car in a second, because this isn't like a little toy car that's going around on the track like we typically think of remote control cars. But are you saying that the average person, say, or spectator will be able to somehow remotely jump into the driver's seat?
So right now, we are approaching it more in an elite fashion. So this private league, we're really scouting for the best drivers to really push the sport and show the capabilities of what you can do with this technology. But we are opening it up almost similar to like an American Idol aspect, where we could find this global search of the best drivers from different parts of the globe to see who's the best at managing this beast. That's the ultimate goal here. So sometimes when you look at, and I love Formula One and everything like that, but sometimes it does feel a little disconnected. There are the pros. I don't even know how to get involved. I don't even know how to, you know, I don't know what the steps to take to even get in there. But with remote reality, you can actually physically control what you're watching. And that's something that's miles ahead what's going on in just content programming. And the technology allows us to do that.
Well, you know, you said something really interesting about American Idol. Sometimes one of the most interesting parts of American Idol is the early stages when you get people in that are terrible
yes.
singers. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
I guess yeah. being a terrible singer is one thing, but being a terrible driver of a very expensive car is something else. Do you envision something like this where somehow safely you protect your expensive cars while people are jumping in and giving it a whirl?
Great question. I'm happy you touched on that. That's one of the reasons why we are starting with the more advanced drivers first and then expanding our program. What we're finding right now in our research lab phase is during our private beta testing, we're testing with different drivers from all different professions, backgrounds, regions. And right now, the ones who we're very closely working with come from esports, and they're looking to take it up a notch, right? They're looking for a game to become real. We are finding some really good potential drivers, obviously, from that space, and even just drivers, real streetcar drivers who drive in New York City or LA or Miami, and you know, and they're taking a liking to what we're doing here. So So we're just in a process of research and just gaining data from this new technology, really. And it's not limited. We're not limited to different walks of life. I'll tell you that.
When I mention remote racing to people, they say, oh, well, without a driver sitting in the car and the chance that there might be a wreck or, you know, the risk of human life during that's where to some extent where excitement comes in. That's going away. Without that human element of risk, why do you think people are going to want to watch this?
Well, in fact, remote reality has a ton of risk because it's not a completely autonomous vehicles that would have a 100% predictability of exactly driving around the course with precision and zero chance of crash. Remote reality still has that human touch. And that's what's important. It's really the symbiotic relationship between human and machine, where it's not just 100% machines doing all the work. So there is still that element of anxiety as far as who's going to come first, who's going to win, who may crash. But it's also taking into a fact that you can now push the engineering of the vehicles to do things that hasn't been seen before. And that's really what keeps us up at night. The idea that we could actually do things instead of having a car, you know, nicely go around a track or copy F1 or copy NASCAR, we could really push the limits of the courses to go more vertical and do things that haven't been caught on camera yet.
So what would be some of the crazy things that you think you might see in one of these races? Like you mentioned like super bank turns, and you're not thinking like Robo Wars or anything like that where these cars might shoot at each other, you know?
No. We're not for this one. This is, we'd like to keep that prestige upper echelon aspect to the sport. But yeah, there's no shoot 'em up games. It's not a shoot 'em up situation.
No obstacles are going to pop up in the middle of the track or anything
that. Yeah.
It's not Mario Kart.
Yeah, Mario Kart is great at what they do, and I love Mario Kart. But I think having vehicles that can push some of the physics, the kind of gravity-defying elements that haven't been seen, where cars can go on 90-degree angles and drive on walls based off of the bank, how they hit it, and how the G-force doesn't come at the side, but comes directly on top of the car, so we can really keep that momentum. These are the things that our team is working really hard on and drilling in the physics. And obviously, you know, going into digital twin technology, it's a huge help for what we're doing here.
Well, tell us a little bit about the car. So there's no driver, so you don't need no seats, no doors, no airbags, there's restraint systems. Describe the car. How big? How fast?
I think it's one of those I could show you better than I could tell you, and hopefully someone could look up the Avacar Gen Zero model, because it's hard to describe, but we think looks really cool.
Well, you have an Italian design firm actually working on it. We know the Italians design great cars.
Yes, they do. When you want the best, you got to work with the best. So we reached out to iconic car designers in Italy. Spada Concept has done remarkable designs, Alfa Romeo, Aston Martin. They've done some designs for Ferrari. I mean, you name it. These guys are like the top of their class. And I mean, these are like real James Bond style cars.
How did you explain that to them? When you sat down with Spada, what did you say? We want a, because this is something that's never been designed before.
I wish you were in the room the first time they were hit with this concept. They stood there for a little bit. And then it was just like they understood the evolution of the two-seater, you know, the cross-country competition, the NASCAR models, the evolution to the one-seater, the single-seater, which was Formula One. And then now this new evolution, which is the zero-seater, where the driver's seat is removed from the vehicle. They caught on and they loved it. And they were hit with a challenge to create what kind of embodied a little bit of a progressive modern take on what motorsports is today.
How fast does it go?
Well, we're in research lab mode right now. So this is all R&D. The vehicles can go 200 miles per hour right now. But once we can actually start testing in the simulation environment, understanding exactly the optimal speeds between, you know, routers independent from the car speed. All of these factors play into the league. So that's why it's so beneficial for us to do a lot of this simulation testing in digital twin technology, because for us, the speed of the car independently is somewhat irrelevant. Even if we made the car 300 or 400 miles per hour, it's really about the connection and the control between the driver and the car, which may or may not be thousands of miles apart.
What about some of the features? It's an electric car. There's all sorts of cameras and 360-degree cameras that are in it. You talk about hand tracking controls. What would the experience be like on the driver's side? And what's actually inside your Gen Zero car?
So the experience is you put on a headset and you're almost transported to that vehicle. And that's what it feels like. It feels like you are inside the car and you're operating the car as if you were right there. So that's very interesting. And that's why we're kind of using these tools in a slightly different way than what's traditionally being used right now. So it feels very much, you know, they say, what is the quote everyone says, where the shortest distance between two points is not a straight line, it's zero. And it's when you fold the papers
they
together.
They become one.
Yes, yes. You're changing space a little bit. And this is kind of our take on just kind of teleportation and the ability to control something in thousands of miles away, but in real time and in split second. I think that's really fascinating for us.
You have this thing called the angel key. And there's like two different levels to the angel, this angel key. What exactly is that?
It's not a physical key put in a car, but what it is, it's a physical key that connects to your headset device or your console to authenticate the ownership of the car. So you have the key inside your home, and it's not just a functional item that authenticates that the car belongs to you or you're qualified or authorized to drive this vehicle, but it's also a physical reminder. And it's a reminder that it's not just a video game and that the stakes are higher and you're actually controlling a physical object.
So there's two levels to this key. There's the ride sharing and then there's the team franchise. And there's thousands of these ride sharing ones, but only 11 of the team franchise. So if we go back to the American Idol kind of thing, I guess there's potentially 4,000 drivers, but ultimately the finals is going to be 11. Is that how it works?
Exactly. So it's a private league, so it's not open to everybody. We're keeping it very exclusive and looking to find of these thousands, the top, the best drivers that we can possibly have that can control these. So it's kind of like a more closed off sport right now. It's very exclusive. And we're going to grow as we grow and we start collecting more data and learning and speaking with more drivers and fine tuning the product. We think we're going to be able to grow this sports league out on a more global level.
The track you're working on, maybe you could describe that a little bit. I mean, is it an oval? Is it a road course? What's the size of the track? And it is a quote unquote smart track. What's the advantage of a smart track over a non-smart track? How does it make things more exciting?
Yeah, definitely. Everybody knows what a normal racetrack looks like. And for us, the reason why we need a smart track is because the track can communicate with the vehicle. And that's very important for us and the sport. There's a lot of data that we get to learn from that, and also preventative measures from damaging vehicles, where certain steps can be taken and we can predict the probability of certain damage and make certain steps that can reduce it. Not eliminate it, but drastically reduce it compared to not having it at all. So that's what that is. As of right now, we've been testing on an open field where beginners can just get accustomed to it and get a sense of what it's like to operate it and not having any obstacles in the way. And we try to kind of hold their hand and build up with them until they get really comfortable and really skilled at it. And then for the more advanced ones, we take them to the track. They get to understand what that feels like. But luckily for us, we have got to test on pre-existing velodromes. And that's been very helpful for us.
Like a bicycle track, because those are really banked on the oval part, I guess you could say, on the turn.
Yeah. It's almost practice that we like to call it, and helps us learn from the next stage, which is more of a vertical wall. But right now we've been testing on velodromes. They're very convenient for the vehicles. Because there's nobody inside the vehicles, the size doesn't have to be the same size scale as if a human driver is inside one. The only thing that's on board is live stream cameras. So because we want to keep things efficient, because we're working with the Italian designers and things of that, we really want to be smart about space and speed and weight. And we realized there was a lot of wasted space if we were to match the same size, let's say, as a Formula One. So we went with a more conducive vehicle that allowed us to test on a velodrome and then allows us to take it to more customized tracks later down the years.
So this is the picture you're painting. So you've got this electric car, remote control. And what's the size of the car relative to a Formula One car, say, or a NASCAR? What's the size of the car?
So it's 79 inches in length and 44.5 inches in width. Roughly about a one and a half scale model sports car with only live stream cameras on board and a pretty cool distinctive blue light, brake light at the back.
So you've got a half size, roughly half scale car. What's the rough cost of one of these cars, would you say? What, when you're controlling this thing, how much money is on the other end of the line just in case I have an accident?
Well, there's a lot that goes into that, and we are doing, we're working with teams that specialize in this sort of thing, and the insurance aspect and certain parts that are put aside for a season, whether that's the suspension or bodywork parts.
Or have those spare parts ready
to
go.
Engine. Yeah. And that's just taking kind of a chapter out of F1 and the professionals.
In any
that
kind
do
of
it.
Racing, you would think.
In any kind of racing, exactly.
But what's the rough cost of one of the cars?
Ask us that at the end of the summer. I'll give you a more accurate number. But yeah, it's, you know, as of right now, we look at the team franchise cost of $1.1 million to be pretty reasonable compared to the fact that there's only 11 and sports teams is a pretty hot commodity.
So you've got these half-sized, high-end sports cars racing around on a velodrome-sized track. But the track is unlike a velodrome track because it's smart. It's going to be communicating with the cars, remotely controlled. Now you're doing this for the first time. No one else has ever done this. So if you took a step back, what do you think are the big technical engineering hurdles that you're facing as you try and make this remote reality racing reality?
Yeah. So for us, our team is working really hard on latency. So latency is a big thing with our sport compared to probably any other sport in existence.
And just so everyone understands, so latency would be if I'm sitting in my living room and I tell the car, do A, it does it in X amount of time and I see that it did it, right? I mean, when we see something in the real world, it's, well, we certainly perceive it as being immediate. But if you're racing, I would think latency would be very, very important. You want it to be as close to zero as you can get.
Absolutely.
How do you do that?
Working with some really bright people. That's what we start there. Our guys come from, you know, MIT. They work with NASA. They're, you know, really experts in the whole spatial environments. And so for us, we're tackling that problem head on and working on special codecs, working with some other experts in the space. Compression is a huge thing. And like I said, we are in R&D phase and Wi-Fi is increasing every year. Speeds are increasing every year, and it's never going to go backwards, right? So we went from 4G to 5G. It's going to go to 6G. It's never going to go back, right? We're in a testing R&D phase, and we're slowly bringing in the community to help, to see what's under the hood and grow with us. So we want them to see, like, we're going to start releasing a lot of like the trials and tribulations and some of the drivers and personalities we're working with, and let people really understand that, you know, this is kind of like almost like a rocket launch more so than a traditional video game.
One of the things I still remember from engineering school is when you're going 60 miles an hour, it's 88 feet per second. Let's call it 150 miles per hour, just to make calculations a little bit easy. But so you're roughly going to be 150 feet per second. So if we say a tenth of a second, that's 15 feet. A lot can happen in 15 feet. Tenth of a second or hundredth might be okay, but now you're doing that pass and you could be inches away from another car that's also doing 100 miles per hour or whatever it is. How do you perceive that you're going to be able to handle those types of conditions where you need split-second decisions and evasive maneuvers, whatever you want to call it? Can the latency handle that, or do you have a system that will help help this remote driver make sure they can get through that evasive maneuver easily?
Yes, to your point, exactly. We call it Guardian Angel AI, and what it does is it helps assist some of these circumstances, which you've just mentioned. There are certain frames that there will be gaps and certain signals that may not reach because of the speed of the car, just sheer speed. So for this, we're working with AI to help fill in some of those gaps and to give us a slight, much more helpful, predictable path for the vehicles so that when the signals come back, the driver is back in like nothing ever changed, nothing ever happened. And we are right now in that process of testing how much is too much and how much we should scale it back. And based off the skill level of the driver, that's when we can kind of scale it back a bit, kind of like training wheels. And for the more beginner style drivers or feeling it out for the first time, we use a certain amount of AI until we scale it back.
I would imagine that during these types of maneuvers, technologies that are used on autonomous cars like radar or LIDARs in conjunction with the cameras and using the AI to take information from all of these sensors in a way that I liked what you said is you don't really want to disturb the feeling that the driver's getting that they have control, but it's like you said, this guardian angel is getting, shall we say, information. This AI-driven guardian angel is getting information from these different types of sensors. It's coming in, it's coming out, it's coming in, all depending on, I guess, where the car is on the track, how close it is to the other car. Maybe that's where the smart track comes in. I mean, that's also going to give you information.
Yeah, there's a lot of like triangular movement that's happening, that's being recorded. There must be like three or four actual pillars that's working in conjunction for this, because the ultimate goal is for us to make these the fastest competitive vehicles, sports cars on Earth. And we know that's a bold statement, and we don't think we're going to get there tomorrow, but that is our North Star, and that's what we're working towards. We're working with a lot of bright people and pushing for that goal. So for us, this is an entire learning and data collection phase where we're looking at what's the optimal car speed at 30 miles per hour, at 50 miles per hour, at 80, at 100, past 100, and learning how all of these different technologies work in sync with one another. So we do have our work cut out for us, and we're nowhere near that platonic ideal, but I'm very happy about the progress we've made thus far. We've had people driving across the country from Vegas into New York in like split second. I mean, the latency speeds don't even feel, it's very, very slight. And we're almost going to get it down to like, you don't even feel it at all. We're in the content world as well. And I've done billions of views with some of the stuff we've worked on. So this is putting something else really cool and exciting in front of the lens.
Well, you use the word feel. You want to feel that it's real. And one of the things when you're driving a race car is the feel? Like, as you're going through the turn, you're feeling those G-forces, and are the tires about to break loose or not? That's how you determine how much more you might want to turn the wheel. Is there a plan to have some sort of tactile feedback?
So for us, the best way where we feel we can communicate that feeling at that distance is haptic suits.
Haptic suit. Well, I like that. So it's going to push on you?
Yeah, a little bit of compression I think is really cool when you're, you know, you're pushing it up a notch. If you hit a wall or you hit a car, obviously you feel that. And then obviously if you use it in conjunction with a headset, that whole experience feels like you're in the racetrack itself.
So is that like a virtual headset and a suit that somehow pushes on you? Is that what you're describing?
Yeah. But there's many ways you can experience Avacar. It doesn't have to be just that, but there are ways where, whether it's, you know, a steering wheel that's locked in position and it's stationary. Right now, we're talking to so many different drivers that have their own preferences on how they want to really experience the car. And the haptic suit and the immersive headset is something that's kind of been at the top of the list. But there's also been drivers who just want to play it off their Xbox controller, or they just want to use the joysticks. That's with the Oculus or the Vive or the PSVR2. So,
do you envision that there might be different systems at the control side? Not everyone's going to want to use the haptic suit.
You know, right now we're just listening to the drivers. It's not a one fits all size. So we're just still looking to just expand our beta program right now and before the season starts, and just speak to as many potential drivers as possible right now. So we'll see. And then also being able to be in a position where if there isn't something on the market that's really giving them that oomph that they need, maybe stepping in and exploring what they would want to help amplify that experience.
We've talked about a lot of different things. So you've got this electric car, it's got sensors on it, you got a smart track, you've got latency, remote controlling, tactile feedback, tactile suits. First time's ever been done. You mentioned it earlier. You're working with Siemens and trying to take digital twin technology to help you engineer this. So in this application, maybe explain what exactly is the digital twin and how's it going to help you design this?
So digital twin is remarkable technology, and it really helps us go many steps into the future in a quicker time frame. So that's very beneficial for us, right? A lot of the theories and assumptions that we can predict with the physics and our engineers, we get to really test them in a simulated environment, and that does a lot for us. That helps us reduce costs without having to try something, test it, crash it, something breaks, what happened, and trying to kind of reverse engineer things. When we get to put them in a digital twin environment and we can learn from that, that just helps catapult the manufacturing process just so much quicker and more streamlined. So as we said, you know, this isn't, we're making thousands of cars for this league right now. This is 11 high performance vehicles that we need the best quality and the best engineering for. So the digital twin really helps us push it and stress test a lot of these theories first before making it manufacturing and putting it on the track.
So as you say, stress test, which means you want to get as close to the actual operating conditions so that you can see if your design is going to be successful. Unlike a video game, you have to have the physics modeled properly, the acceleration, the decelerations, how well the tires stick to the track, how well the tires stick to the track as they wear out, and the aerodynamics as one car is trying to pass another one. It's almost like taking a video game and making it real and actually using it to design the vehicle up front. I mean, it's one thing to style it, but what's going on inside of it? What's the nature of the tires? What's the nature of the acceleration and deceleration? How long will the batteries last? I mean, you have to figure all that out in this digital twin before you even make anything physical.
Absolutely.
So you have a digital twin. it's accurate in terms of how it represents the physical world. You use it for design, but you could also use it for training. Will it also be used as part of the actual control system ultimately?
Yeah, because, you know, when it comes down to the game publishers, we're not necessarily looking to compete with them, but we are looking to create a true simulation training tool that allow us to find and filter out the best drivers. So it has a real functionality purpose for Avacar, and at the same time being exciting and entertaining. But it really is function before form on this. The ability to create real world physics and to place it into the simulation game, training game, allows that behavior of controlling the vehicle to be almost seamless, as if it's the same, almost identical. And that's what we want, because for us, we're really looking to find the top percentage of drivers who really excel in the simulation training.
Well, racing is a lot about the personalities, and you've been talking about these drivers. And I mean, if you think about Formula One or IndyCar, but and certainly this Netflix Drive to Survive series, it's all about the drama between the drivers and the team captains and the crew. And so for Avacar, now you got these people all over the world. Can you describe the nature of the drivers? And it sounds like the nature of the drivers could be quite diverse.
Well, I can only make assumptions for right now of who we think will be in the season. But as of what we're seeing in our research lab phase and this focus group that we've essentially conducted and expanding it through the spring and summer, is kind of a wide range of different individuals. Like I was mentioning earlier, some that are like amazing esports racing drivers, like fantastic esports drivers. We're seeing them come to fold and really understanding how to use the technology pretty well. And then we have our real car drivers. But then we're getting people who are doormen, who are teachers, who are, who have we? I mean, we're seeing all walks of life, students, and the age range, you know, from 16 to 55, we're seeing, because people love cars and there's no age bracket for cars. When you love cars, you just love cars and it's timeless.
Love them forever. Well, do you think you'll have like movie stars and music celebrities, former F1 drivers or IndyCar drivers, but also, I don't know, non-celebrities as well?
Yeah, I think that helps also speak to our audience, where I think having a more diverse group of really high-end sponsors, but also cultural figures and influential figures, I think helps speak to our demographic and something that hasn't really been done so much with the other leagues. So obviously we come from that music entertainment space as well. And so we have relationships, obviously, with a lot of big, big stars, music stars, some actors as well. But again, it's for people who are looking at, you know, who believe in what we're doing. You know, we're not doing it for clout or for brownie points. I mean, we are truly trying to push the needle on what can be done in motorsports. And also, we are truly bringing something different when it comes to sports content and sports programming. So I don't know what to tell you, man. I'm just excited.
Well, you come from the music and movie business. You founded a company called Chariot Pictures. The things we're talking about now is you're going to have these characters in your racing series. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do? You're still at Chariot Pictures. What are some of the movies you've made, music videos? What are the ones you're the most proud of? And how does what you've learned there helping you in what you're doing now?
Good question. One of the videos I think we're proud of, when we've done a few, we've worked with almost everyone we wanted to work with, so that's always a good sign. But one of the videos we're proud of is the video we did with Drake and Meek Mill, pretty big music artists in the hip-hop entertainment space. We got nominated for that video. It was a great video, awesome production, shot it in LA. But I think what music videos, and we've done a ton of videos, and like I said, billions of views globally over a decade, so it's kind of our wheelhouse. But what's interesting for us, because we're dealing with cameras, is a few things. We specialize in short form content, which is more kind of the 250, 5 minute, 20 minutes, 30 minutes short video, short film, intro. We've almost fine tuned and understood exactly really good ways to hold attention and what's considered cool, what's considered boring. We've learned a lot, I could say, over our years. So I think it works in the sense of motorsports, and I think it works in the sense of sports programming in general, because we're not looking to do the 2 hour long format races. And I still love them. I still watch the 2-3 hour sports events, but shorter format packaged content, things that drive you into, here's the competition, here's these personalities, these guys are going head to head, this is live, and the outcome and the result could be more instantaneous. I think it speaks a little bit to the demographic today than the others. So,
well, let's take you were nominated for an award for the Drake video, you said. What are the elements that were in that video that make it award worthy?
Well, for us, we've never taken the traditional quote unquote hip hop approach, right? And everybody has the stereotypical what a hip hop music video is, right? Or, you know, how it's supposed to come off. So for us, we've always kind of pushed the needle and tried to put artists in just a different environment. What we did was, and I implore you to look it up, it's called Going Bad, but it was one of Drake and Meek's biggest records. And we had them play chicken, where two Rolls Royces would come head to head. And I won't spoil it. I won't tell you what happens, but definitely go watch it. It's called Going Bad. It's over 100 million views right now. But it got to teach us a few things. And I think for one, it's about working with good people. And we had a really good crew on set. And we had really good energy. And we had a lot of people bring their A game to the party.
So you're taking what someone might expect in a hip hop video, and you're adding an element of surprise, or at least, oh, wow, I've never seen it done in this way. It sounds like a really fun thing to be doing, coming up with ideas. How do you come up with your ideas for a hip hop music video? Is it you or is it the artist? Who comes up with the idea?
Yeah, I'm really blessed to work with some talented folks. The director I work with, his name's Kid Art, one of the top music video directors in the game. They call him the next Spike Lee of our generation. So I'm very blessed to work with him. He's also my younger brother, so there's perks there. And also our
partner,
Andrew
Gore.
He's
in the brown blood then, huh?
Yeah, yes, like. Exactly. The brown blood, brown brothers. Director Kid Art, it's amazing. Check him out. And also some really talented folks, our partner, Andrew Gore, you know, really bright, bright guys. He could make magic. It's mostly us presenting, creating an idea that we think fit the music and how it can translate the best way to their audience and make sure it's authentic and nothing looks forced and it's on point and it's on message. We specialize in that. For us, we approach them with the ideas fleshed out, and most of the time, they love it.
So it sounds like a lot of fun. So if you're having so much fun making these music videos, working with all these great artists and all that, why do you want to now do a racing, remote car racing series?
I need to have you over for dinner sometime. We got a lot to talk about. We've came to a place in the music industry that we've worked with almost everybody we wanted to. Maybe a couple, like we didn't get to work with Jay-Z yet or Rihanna. But for the most part, we've worked with almost every artist we've always wanted to work with. And we're always searching for that challenge, that next challenge that could allow us to kind of like push it. And our experience in the music video world, it's been cool because we came off of a little camera, a little 5D camera, grew it to 50 person sets, and car, all type of explosions and all type of, you know, things on set. So we got to really ride that full journey and see the, you know, and experience that. And we love it, but we've learned so much. It would be a disservice to not share what we've learned and some of the people who we're doing this with. We're looking to push the needle.
So you look back on this experience you have in the music, the movie business. What would you say maybe the top one or two things that you've learned there that's going to help you in the racing business? Mm-hmm. One that comes to my mind right away is I'm sure you must have to deal with a lot of egos.
Yeah. That's that. You might have to help me on that one. You start to learn how to be gentle and firm with
at the same
personalities.
Time.
Yeah, at the same time. So there's a somewhat of a dance to it.
Well, let's talk about the actual event itself and the whole idea of finding these drivers. So some might be music artists. Oh, in fact, of all the artists you've worked with, have any of them shown interest in being a driver?
Yeah, that we're going to announce that soon. That's going to be announced soon.
All right, we'll keep an eye out. We'll keep an eye out for that.
Yes.
You don't want to announce that here on the Future Car Podcast?
Next time.
All right.
But yeah, you'll see that within the next 45 days. We want to do something nice and symbolic for that. So
coming in the summer of 23,
yes.
Then.
Yes.
All right. Okay, so you line up these drivers. Some could be celebrities. Some could be former drivers. Some could be just your average person that's interested in this. And you're going to be using this digital twin as a foundation for this training system. And there's different levels. Like you talk about hand-eye coordination test, simulation game, getting the actual license, and ultimately getting to the big race. Explain the steps on that.
So it first starts with the Angel Key. And the Angel Key is something that we are distributing on a very limited, exclusive basis. So we will be almost releasing them like sneakers. Like these are very high-priced, valuable items. They can't be duplicated. It's also authenticated on the blockchain. But physical keys that activate and turn on the car thousands of miles away. So these are special keys. And no keys on Earth can do this. So if you're lucky enough to get a key, and again, we're going to be doing key drops. You sign up. Go to avacar.io. You sign up. You be a part of the newsletters. You get a part of the journey. And you will find out when we actually do key drops and key launches in different parts of the world this summer.
And a key drop, by that you mean that's going to be an opportunity to become one of the people that can try out. It's sort of like getting the tryout for American Idol.
Exactly. So we're not giving that chance to everybody. It's not like every Tom, Dick, and Harry can drive these cars. These are very specialized cars, as we just discussed. So we're only looking to keep it very privatized, very exclusive. And that's why we really believe in this private league approach to this. So if you get a key, you have the ability and opportunity to test drive, test the technology, drive the car, and in hopes of getting scouted.
Who's doing the scouting?
It's a combination of our internal team and the team franchise owners.
Oh, so they're looking for that great talent, that great remote driving talent.
Yeah. And it helps them be a part of that journey, right? They're building a team that represents their car and their teams. And there'll also be team owners who just would like to leave it up to us and have us kind of form the team for them as well, kind of like just helping them manage the team. So we will be offering those types of services as well, but we do envision some that would just want to be involved in every aspect, right? Growing the team, building the asset.
So as your candidates, right, make it through this process, this will all be filmed and presented, I guess, online or as part of a series?
Yeah. So we're going to start dropping content on YouTube and, you know, LinkedIn and social medias, Instagram, TikTok, the whole nine, and really kind of building out the kind of what Netflix is doing, but more snapshot versions as we continue to build. and get to showcase the different personalities and drivers and start getting into elimination rounds and people who are fighting to stay in. And so we're going to create a lot of cool content around this. We work with the best when it comes to that.
Yeah, and that's really, we've been mentioning Drive to Survive several times here for Formula One, but it's that content that's made that sport even more popular. So the actual race itself, when do you think the first race is going to be?
So the season starts at the end of this year, starts in December, and goes into the first half of 2024.
Okay.
So that's when you will start to see the elimination process. You will start to see more brackets. And that's when you will see the true competitive spirit of this technology.
So starting early next year sometime or in 24, we start to see this whole collection of people that want to be drivers, the elimination, boom, 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 till finally sometime next year, I would imagine you're going to have the race. It sounds like the races are going to be short. They're not going to be like 2-hour events. It'll be like a series of short events that eliminates it from whatever it is down to the 11.
So there are certain things and certain fundamentals that are proven successful that we're borrowing a little bit from. So yes, a lot of things are straightforward, very fundamental. The technology isn't, the experience isn't, and the more kind of decentralized sports league, if you will, that I think is something that deserves to be in. And also a diversity approach. You know, and I'm very happy about, you know, what F1 is doing in that regard. And they've been making improvements in NASCAR. But there's certainly a lot to be done. And I think for us, we can kind of start very organically in that sense, where certain overlooked communities and women can participate in not just the sport, but the sports ownership side of things. And I think that's really important.
Well, you know, in if you want to be a Formula One driver, you have to start when you're very, very young. It's a big investment in time. It's a big investment in money. Yeah. This might be an opportunity. Well, you're not actually going to be driving a Formula One car, but you're going to, like you said, be feeling what it's like in some ways. And maybe it doesn't really take that lifelong commitment. So let's look a little bit into the future, right? You're going to have your race next year. Where do you think Avicar is going to be 5-10 years from now?
That's a great question. And for us, we truly want to be next to an F1, next to a NASCAR, you know, next to a drone racing league that's on NBC. We think we can hang with the best of them. And we think we can create this new professional sports league from the house, which has not been done before, but taken seriously because it's live, it's real, and sports competition is just a slightly different than esports in that sense. And I think for us, being in the real world, but still having that digital component, it's a hybrid. So there's no way you can kind of compartmentalize this, what we're building here with Avicar and this A0 league, which we call it. But we see it at a very high level. We see where the racetracks can do things where we can really push the car to do some exceptional things, some really, really daredevil type of limits. We think we can grow this to Avicar. We look at this A0 thing, like how Star Wars, as like Star Wars IP, right? Like it has a universe of itself. But the only difference with A0 is that it's actually built on real technology that truly exists.
That's the foundation, the fundamental of remote reality. Do you see it being applied to any other sports?
We're working on a few things.
Can you give us an idea? Is it?
We're working on a few things. But you'll be happy. You'll be proud. You'll be proud.
All right. It feels real, but, you know, to be able to sit in a race car, even a go-kart, is physically demanding. You have to be strong. You have to have endurance. I mean, your heart's going to be going at, you know, when you're sitting in an F1 car, your heart's probably beating at 150 to 200 beats per minute or whatever it is for 3 hours. And it's 100 degree, you know, Fahrenheit, on and on and on. Well, this is a little bit different. I mean, you don't have all that. So do you think in the future, remote reality will start to make it so this becomes a very enjoyable sport. People like to do it. People like to watch it. So now the physical attributes that you have to participate in something like this is going to be diminished or maybe go away?
Good question. We never want to replace that feeling of being in an F1 car or a go-kart for that matter. I love that experience. Obviously, I haven't been in an F1 car.
Have you driven a race car before?
I haven't driven an F1 car. Ferraris and stuff like that and Porsches, but not like not anything on the real racetrack that I could say I have had that experience yet. My friends have, but for me, I stick with what I know. And, you know, a lot of people aren't going to have that experience, right? They aren't going to be able to rent some time out on the racetrack for the weekend and drive their cool sports car or even be inside an F1 car. But this might be the closest thing to it. And even if it's a transition for F1 drivers, you know, so be it. But for us, obviously, we understand humans tend to deal with the path of least resistance. Yes, I think this sport is on the side of comfortability, for sure. I think it's taking people who take video games even very serious and almost pro league, pro status. And I think it helps translate that in a way that hasn't been done before that we're pretty excited about.
Well, listen, Cardi, thank you so much for joining us here on the Future Car Podcast, giving us an idea of what this new realm, this new reality, this remote reality is all about, how it applies to racing.